America in crisis. It's Election 2020 with John Catsimatidis and special guests on 77 WABC.
This is 77 WABC. John Catsimatidis here, and special guest today, Congressman Peter King. And we're here to talk about the problems we're having in New York. And Congressman, what do you think?
Well, listen, I think yesterday what we saw in Queens with the two police officers being shot when they were actually escorting a woman back to a home who was a victim of domestic abuse and domestic violence shows what a tough job the cops have day in and day out, what a great job they do, and how dangerous it is. I mean, just think. I mean, there they are doing God's work, trying to protect a woman, and then out of the blue, this guy appears and opens fire on them. In the house, and you think the mayor and others have been talking about using social workers instead of police when it comes to domestic violence. Can you imagine if they've been social workers there yesterday instead of cops, or if they've even been social workers there with the cops when that fire opened? I mean, that whole thing couldn't have lasted more than 2 or 3 seconds. The two cops were seriously wounded, and they were able to shoot back and take the guy out. That's a dangerous situation.
Well, the average lifespan of social workers visiting situations like that is going to be very low.
Really is. And
I don't think I would sell them life insurance. I mean, this is silly what's going on.
It really is.
And let's continue this conversation more, but I think we have one of your friends on the line.
Yeah, actually a great friend of everybody in New York, certainly every baseball fan, Art Shamsky, the great star for the 1969 World Series champions. And John, Art was with us the other day when you had that Thanksgiving demonstration or Thanksgiving event outside St. John's Church on West 31st Street, where you donated 10,000 turkeys, and we had all these sports legends, Art Shamsky, Ed Cranepool, Doc Gooden, John Starks, Earl of Pearl Monroe, Bobby Jackson, and go down the list. It was all great, but it was great to see Art there. Art, how you doing?
Great. Nice to be here, John, and Peter. It was a great day on Monday.
It was Monday. Great having you there. You really added a lot to it. I mean, it was
great for me for a couple reasons. I really appreciate what John's done with giving out the turkeys and what he's doing, and seeing you and all you've done for watching our backs in Congress, and also gave me a chance to say hello to some old friends I hadn't seen in a while. Earl the Pearl Monroe was just one of my idols, and we're sort of contemporaries at the same time, but I appreciate his greatness. And John Starks, of course, was a great player with the Knicks, and there was a number of players there, and it just was a wonderful, wonderful atmosphere, knowing that we brightened some lives. And that's all we can ask to do, is if we can make somebody feel a little bit better in these horrible times, and we've accomplished something. And so kudos to you, John, for what you do and all you've done for the charity work that you do, and Peter, for all the stuff and work you've done in Congress for all of us. And it was just a great day.
On this end, it's really, Gristini's customers and D'Agostino customers, our cashiers and our people did a great job raising money from them, and our staff at WABC asking listeners to contribute. They did a great job. So it's a team effort. Father Francis and Joe Sano, the executive director of St. Francis Kitchens, we all work together. That's what it takes: teamwork, leadership, and teamwork to say charge, and that other people are going to follow behind you. And we were able to give away 10,000 turkeys this year. 10,000 turkeys could probably feed 50,000 people. What do you think, Peter?
I would think so. Of course, the way you and I eat, I don't know. You may
say.
Oh,
yeah.
Well, those turkeys were heavy, too. I think they were 16-pound turkeys, and we had to pick them up and let the photographers take photos of it and everything. And it was like a workout. But so they weren't little turkeys, John, that you gave away. So everybody was so excited.
That's great.
When you can see a smile on somebody's face who really needs some uplifting, it's just, I mean, I can't even describe how important it is for us to be able to do that. And when you're doing that, it's just terrific. And it's such an awful time in the city and the world and the country right now. And just hopefully things will get better. But we did brighten up some people's lives for just a little bit, and I'm really happy about that.
Well, this is the style of New Yorkers. New Yorkers have always been a generous clan. You know, people, New Yorkers want to help people. And especially help other New Yorkers. You know, the problem happens, you know, you got 7 billion people in the world, 8 billion. What are we up to now, Peter?
I don't know. It's an awful lot.
And you can't, unfortunately, we can't help the whole world. But before we help people in the rest of the world, I think we have to make sure all Americans are okay. In other words, you know, well, President Trump used to have that expression, Americans first.
Right.
In other words, let's make sure every American is okay, and then we still want to help the rest of the world. That's the way Americans are.
Also, John, you mentioned the importance of teamwork, and probably Art would say that the 1969 Mets, as talented as they were, they really won because of the teamwork. I mean, that was an incredible team that Gil Hodges put together. Everyone had a role to play. And, you know, maybe not everyone liked the role they were given because they had to subordinate themselves to the team effort. But, Art, how was that being on that team?
Well, it's, you know, I'm still in New York because of it. It was a wonderful experience for me to be part of that incredible team that people still talk about today. You know, it's, there's not a lot of teams that you think back, 51 years now, and you think back and say, who won the World Series back in so-and-so and back in that year? But everybody knows that 1969, it was the New York Mets. And you know, it was an awful time back then also. You know, the war in Vietnam was tearing this country apart. There was a lot of problems in New York City, financially, socially, strikes, all sorts of things going on. And what we did collectively as a team that year is we made people feel a little bit better about things that were going on in their life, and they remembered that, and they passed it on from generation to generation. So for me, being part of that team, it was just an incredible experience. You know, I played 13 years, and nobody really talks about the other 12. It's really about 1969, and I appreciate that, and I understand it, and I think all of the guys on that team who were still around, we've lost, 10 or 11 guys from that team, but everybody on that team really contributed to the success of that team, as you said, Peter. And I think while we weren't crazy about in that platoon system that our manager, Gil Hodges, was doing, everybody did get a chance to play, and everybody did something to help us win. And I think people remember that. And you know, that was a great year for sports, if you remember. The Jets won the Super Bowl in January. We won the World Series in October. And the Knicks won the NBA championship in May of 70. So, and all for the first time. Nobody had ever won before. So it was a great year for sports, but not a great year for the outside world. And what all of us did was kind of make people feel better about their lives at an awful time. And we're going through a world that's upside down now, so we're hoping that that'll change sometime soon. But if we can just kind of help out in some small way like we did on Monday, that's really what it's all about.
All right, if I could put in a plug for you, you mentioned how the Knicks and the Mets and the Jets all won titles within an 18-month period, and you wrote a great book on that. So I'll give you a free plug there for your book. It was a great book.
Oh, thanks. Yeah, The Magnificent Season. Right. Yeah, it was about a wonderful time for sports, but an awful time for the city and the country. You know, I tried to find some timeline events to show what was going on at certain points, and I couldn't find any good news. And it was just no good news, and it was all about riots and marches and protests. And, you know, and I'll just give you a perfect example, John and Peter. When the Knicks won their championship, I think it was May 8th, 1970, 3 days before they won, we had the shootings at Kent State,
right,
where our National Guard shot and killed 5 students and wounded 9. So it was a world that was really, really kind of upside down. And so I'm really thankful that we, in some small way as a team, helped a bunch of people, a lot of people, get through some turbulent times. And we're in an awful time right now. We've got to find some way to get past this pandemic and get together as a country. And whatever we can do in some small way, I'm all for. And thank you for mentioning the book. And then, of course, I wrote After the Miracle, which was a book that came out last year about the 50th anniversary of that great 69 Met team. And so I'm just thankful that we didn't have that 50th anniversary.
By the way, breaking news. I just came over to take a breaking news. President Trump has pardoned General Flynn.
Oh, good. Very good. Art, I was going to say, you know, you mentioned about the lasting memory of the 69 team. And I know, like, I've been with you and my grandson Jack when you have these training sessions for kids. And it's amazing that the kids and their fathers and maybe even some of their grandfathers were barely alive in 1969. And they're all coming up asking for autographs from you and from Eddie Cranepool. I mean, that is a memory. And you're right. I don't know if anyone would know who won in 1958 or 1972 or, you know, 1976, things like that. But everyone knows the 69 Mets, and you were such an integral part of that. I mean, left-handed swing you had, it was incredible.
Thank you, Peter. And it's true, these kids who weren't even born know about that team because there's been some sort of legacy that's been passed on. There was so many things that happened that year with the Black Cat coming on the field.
Yeah.
Tom Seaver's almost perfect game. Tom Seaver pitching a game where he struck out, 18 or 19, 10 in a row to end the game. I mean, a wonderful, great series against the Cubs and other teams. And just these memories have been passed on in a World Series that nobody thought we could win. We lost the first game. I actually have the distinction of making the last out of the only game we lost in the World Series, which is not too much of a distinction. But I made the last out, and then we won the next four. And so, you know, it was just a memorable year, and people just have passed that stuff on from generation to generation. And so, you're right. I get that all the time, and you know, there's not many days that go by when somebody doesn't talk to me about that year and how important it was to their lives. And so, I'm very, very blessed to have been part of that team because it was a great group of guys and wonderful memories, and you know, just very, very lucky to have been part of it.
I don't want to sound again like I'm talking in the past, but I mean, watching you guys the other day, everyone was low-key, you, Ed Cranepool, Earl LaPearl. I mean, you guys were legends in New York, and yet you were standing out like regular guys just talking. How do you compare that with today's players who seem like they're entitled to make $40 million a year and they have superstar
status?
All
I can say is I wish I was playing making some of that money, but all kidding aside, it was an era we had the utmost respect for everybody. Players, we were friends with everybody, particularly here in New York, because it's just the way it was. And you'd run into them at functions and charity events and things of that nature. I'm sure the guys playing today are all involved in charities and things. You just don't see that much about it for whatever reason. You know, when we talk about today's players in any sports, it's usually about how much money they're making and things of that nature. But I would have to say that guys really are true. The guys are really in their heart are very charitable, and they want to help whatever they can. And I just think that era when we played in back in the 60s and 70s, there was a closeness between the teams here, particularly here in New York. And when you see guys like Earl LaPearl and Johnny Starks and Sean Landetta was there, and Doc Gooden was part of the 86 great team with the Mets. And, you know, you just reminisce and start telling stories. And it's just a wonderful time to spend. And if you can do some charity work at the same time and give out turkeys, what's better than that? So it was a great time for me to be around you and John and his lovely wife and give out the turkeys and just have fun with all the guys.
Let me ask one question. You know, we talk about the Yankees, we talk about the Mets. The Mets are going to be coming under new management. You got a new leader of the pack. You got Steven Cohen. Any opinion on that yet? Any feelings?
I think it has to be a positive. I think that, first of all, he's a true Mets fan, and right off the bat, that's a plus. And I think that he's conscientious enough to want to do what he can, whatever that means in terms of putting money into the organization and spending money. I think he's going to try and do whatever he wants to or can do, and he certainly has some deep pockets, that's for sure. And so I think there's bright days ahead. That doesn't mean he's just going to throw away money and give away money. He's a bright businessman, and he knows what he's doing. And hopefully he'll surround himself with the right people who make the right decisions. And I think it's only a positive. And he's no doubt in the last few weeks there's been so much excitement about the Mets, and Mets fans are really up because they think that this is going to change. It's not going to be that easy. Nothing is easy in this world, but he started off on the right foot, had a great press conference, and he's got Sandy Alderson there to kind of guide him through the baseball part of it. And I think that there's only positive can happen, and I think Mets fans should be really excited about the future, whether that happens in the next one or two or 3 years, who knows? But I think it's a step in the right direction, and I think that that he'll be terrific for the organization, basically because he's got the money, that's for sure. But he's also a big fan, and that combination, I think, it's got to help in the long run.
A lot of us are great fans of you. I just want to wish you a happy Thanksgiving. Really, thank you for coming on today. I'm sure the listeners are absolutely enthused to hear you. And, again, you're a New York legend. You made it happen in 1969. And so, again, great to have you here.
Enjoy Thanksgiving.
Really sweet, John. Best of luck to you and continued success in your businesses and with the charity work you do. And, Peter, anytime you need me for anything, you know where to get me.
Thank you, Otten.
I appreciate it. And best of luck to you. And all the best with the radio program, too.
Happy Thanksgiving.
Now, the breaking news just came across. Yeah. And did you know General Flynn at all?
Yeah, I got to know him pretty well. And he got a raw deal. And to me, first of all, he's a great patriot, great American. He never should have been indicted in the first place. I mean, I was there when Jim Comey told us that the two FBI agents who questioned him did not believe he had lied. And as far as we knew, the case was put off to the side. And suddenly they talk about indicting him. This is all part of the whole Russia collusion hoax that was going on against President Trump. General Flynn got caught up in the investigation, even though what he did was perfectly legal. And talking with the Russian ambassador, he was going to be coming in as the head of national security. And it was really appropriate for him to be talking to him. Now, having said that, the agents themselves said, and these were experts, that in all of the body language and everything from General Flynn, there was no indication he was lying. First of all, he was never told that this was any kind of investigation. These were two FBI agents, one of whom ended up being involved later on in the investigation, had to be fired. But they just wanted to talk about the structure of the National Security Council, what was going on. This was not any part of any criminal investigation as far as General Flynn knew. And he was talking casually. And a few times he contradicted himself, but any of us would. If you analyze a conversation we have in the course of an hour, and there was no reason for him to be, there was no motive, and the body language indicated there was no lie. And yet, as part of this whole thing with Mueller and going after the Trump people, General Flynn got caught up, and it was absolute disgrace and shameful. And the only reason he pleaded guilty was they threatened to bankrupt him and go after his son. So he pleaded guilty, and thank God the president has pardoned him. This is a terrible injustice done to General Flynn, which now has been rectified by President Trump.
Peter, you were there for 30 years just about in Washington. How do we fix the system?
Well, again, you know, politics and government involves people getting involved. And more people who, whether they support President Trump or they support more conservative values, they have to get more involved, and that's it. I mean, listen, we have to assume we start off. There's a lot of negatives here. The media is dead set against President Trump and conservatives. I mean, thank God for your station here. I mean, it's like a beacon.
Yeah, I mean, we just want to tell the truth.
Mm-hmm.
You know, hey, if I'm telling you my opinion, I'll tell you it's my opinion. But I'm not going to report my opinion as news. And I think that's important.
No, it's vital. But we have to start off with the fact that the media is against us, and we can't be crying about it. We have to play the cards you dealt and fight back. This is a crusade worth waging.
Any prediction on what's going to happen with the Twitter or Facebook or Google on telling the truth versus being able to shake up the computers and make things come out the way they want them to come out?
You know, that shows the inherent bias. I wish I understood everything about computers, but I know enough to know that Facebook and Twitter are totally slanted, the way they have the algorithms work and how difficult it is to get across. And the fact that
50 years ago, I was a computer programmer when computers first started coming out. And the way that computers work is you work on more complex algorithm. If somebody has 3 ears, you must be a freak. In other words, you have all the possibilities, and the computer sorts things out and decides who's who. Now we're taking a break, and we're going to take a break right now at 77 WABC, and we'll be right back.
America in crisis. It's election 2020 with John Catsimatidis and special guests on 77 WABC.
Good afternoon. This is Congressman Pete King, And I'm here to, of course, with John Katsimatidis, who owns the whole operation. He's a great friend and had a great event the other day where he arranged to donate 10,000 turkeys to the poor people in New York. And he had great athletes there. It was just a great event. But I really want to thank John for having me here today. But I'm really excited right now. We have coming on the man who was succeeding me in Congress. I was so delighted that he won such a smashing victory in this year's election. He was a great assemblyman in Albany, and now he's going to do a truly, truly outstanding job in Washington. So I'm really proud to be talking to my successor in Washington, who will leave me long in the dust, Andrew Garbarino. Andrew, how you doing?
I'm doing great, Congressman. Thank you so much for having me on, John. Thank you so much for having me on. Not to mention, thank you for all the support you and your wife gave me during the election and having me on the show as much as you did. Great. Happy to be here, though.
No, listen, it's great to have you on. John, I know, is all excited about you coming on.
Well, we wanted to get the truth out. And, you know, the two choices were, do you want to go for law and order or do you want to go for street crime? One or the other. I mean, I think it was a simple choice. And I understand that all the people that supported law and order, that certain people in Nassau County went after them and objected to the police officers. Why are you supporting X, Y, and Z?
Yeah, and I tell you, nobody is a stronger advocate of law and order than Andrew. In fact, for the most part, as I understand, the Democratic opponents in Nassau and Suffolk didn't even meet with the police unions during the campaign to even, you know, to answer questions about endorsements or anything else. But, Andrew, when did you realize that you were really in good shape as far as, because no one knew there was so much money being spent against you. I think you were outspent 2 or 3 to 1. Thank God you had good people like John and Margo contributing to you, but your opponent had money coming in from all over the country to take you out. And on election night, it was really a solid victory. When did you feel that it was, you know, really going your way?
Well, you know, we had seen polls early on in July that showed us a lead. And then we did a poll 2 weeks, I think it was 2 weeks out, that had said, you know, we were still up, it had tightened to 5 points, but we were still winning the two key areas. We were winning Nassau County and we were winning the town of Islip. If you hold those two areas, you can't, there's not enough votes in Babylon to flip that. But we really felt good, just knocking door to door, talking to people on the ground. I had people putting up signs up until election day, people putting signs on their houses who have never put signs up for me before. We had the support from just the people around my hometown, just the people around, you know, Nassau County, your hometown. I felt, Congressman, when I was walking with you in Seaford, I felt like I was walking to my hometown. I saw so many Garbarino signs. It was it was a great feeling. But, you know, we knew we had the right message. We knew we were going to be outspent. We knew a lot of money was coming in from outside sources to go against me. As you said, I think it was 3 to 1. I think they spent almost $14 million against me on this race.
Wow.
They thought they could buy this seat. Most of my opponent's money came in from outside of New York State. Most of my money came in from the district. So, you know, we had the support within the district, and those are the people that vote for you. So we knew we had the right message, the law and order message. John and I spoke about it multiple times on this program. That was resonating with the voters. And it showed up on election day. They all showed up to vote, and we had a bigger victory than our poll told us.
All I know is, Andrew, I got to admit, I was a little bit jealous. Here you are walking through my neighborhood. I saw more Garbarino signs than I ever saw King signs in the past. And people were talking to you as if you were like the next Speaker of the House, and I was just along for the ride. So, any event, you really made a great impression. I mean, you really were able to resonate with people. How important do you think it was in our district, which is now your district, which is so close to New York City? How much do you think the demonstrations and the riots of this summer had in swinging over independent voters to the Republican line?
I think it had a huge impact. By the way, your district, the amount of people that told me 50 times a day, I have huge shoes to fill. Now even Congress, some of the sitting members are still saying, oh, you're the new Pete King? You have big shoes to fill. But the impact,
you will, believe me, you will.
What size? I can see it.
But it definitely had a huge impact because, you know, a lot of people in the district, they work in New York City. You know, they go in every day. And going in and seeing, you know, Fifth Avenue boarded up, you know, not even just New York City, They boarded up the mall in Garden City. They boarded up Roosevelt Field. You know, this is not something that people want to see.
This is not the way Americans want to live.
No.
I mean, we were down for new member orientation and all around the hotel. Everything was boarded up. And I'm thinking to myself, this is insane. We have to do this now because of election? It's mind-boggling. I never would have expected it. But I think New York being boarded up like that, people seeing the riots, people seeing the looting, people seeing, you know, the damage that was done to private property, and also, you know, the attacks on the police. I think people were fed up, and we really have a lot of people that support the police around here.
Well, if you look at the whole map of the country, it's like 95% red or 90% red, except a couple of blue areas. And the question is, in those blue areas, how much cheating is being done versus being real? I mean, you know, it's mind-boggling, and I have no clue. I mean, I'm depending on law enforcement to do their job to let us know what the truth is.
Yeah, I agree. There's all these issues, and the cops have to be given the ability to get the job done. Andrew, actually, you know, we mentioned about, you know, the election is now over. So you're the congressman-elect. You're going to be sworn in just a few weeks. What committees are you looking to be on? And when you were down there in Washington this week, how did it seem the committees were going? And what do you think you have to accomplish?
Well, it was very interesting being down in D.C. And it was like how to be a member of Congress school. You know, all the different programs we had to learn about. It was very interesting. But the talk we've had, and I'm going back down next week. The talk I've had with members, you know, we discussed. You know, you had a seat on financial services for a very long time. You know, banking, insurance, all that. It's a huge, huge part of the economy in New York, especially in the city. We have a lot of residents, constituents that live out here that are in that, you know, work in that industry. So, you know, having a seat on financial services would be a huge seat. Be great for the district, great for the state. We've also talked about T&I, transportation and infrastructure. There's, you know, they keep talking about an infrastructure bill. We need one. We need federal dollars to support infrastructure, to support new infrastructure spending in New York, on Long Island. So if there's going to be a bill, infrastructure bill coming through, being on that committee and having a say in where the money's going, that would be huge. But, you know, one thing I've learned when I went to Albany, I was put on committees I never had any interest in being on, but you don't realize all the issues they touch. You know, you got to make the best of it. And I ended up loving every committee I've ever sat on. So whether I get one of the ones that I'm looking for or whether I get one, you know, just because they need me, the minority needs me on a certain committee because of my expertise, I'm sure whatever we'll do, I'll make the best of it. And I'll be able to turn it into something good for the residents of the 2nd Congressional District.
Andrew, I know that during your campaign, you had Kevin McCarthy in campaigning for you, the Republican leader. Excuse me, you had Steve Scalise, the Republican whip. Even, I think, in their wildest dreams, they didn't see the seats that Republicans are going to gain in Congress this year. I mean, even on, you know, the night of the election, Fox News was announcing, I think, 15 seats were going to go to the Democrats. And instead, the Republicans really picked off a number of Democrats and are in probably the strongest position any minority party has been in since really the end of World War II, I think.
Yeah, it's very exciting. And by the way, no one was more important campaigning for me. Yes, I had McCarthy, but nobody was more important than you, Congressman. I can't tell you how many times people told me they were voting for me just because you told them to. Congress Leader McCarthy is very excited. We had a very nice reception he spoke to us all the freshman members. It's possible, you know, when Claudia Tenney holds on, I know they're doing a recount upstate New York, and there's another new member from Iowa, Ms. Miller Meeks. When they both hold on, we could be at 213 seats,
wow.
And you only need 218 for the majority. The Democrats in the House, Nancy Pelosi, who's dragging her feet, though, by the way. I mean, the majority is dragging their feet on everything. We don't even know half of our schedule for next week for a new member orientation. You know, they won't answer any questions. We don't know what's going on with swearing in. I think they're in such shock from not gaining seats after everybody said they were going to that, they're having a little pity party and they don't
want
to.
It does come back to you. If we won that many congressional seats, how much was the presidential election really at? You know, you just scratch your head. I've been scratching my head. I got a bald spot now.
I mean, I have to agree with you. I mean, we picked up seats in California. We picked up seats in New York. We picked up seats in Iowa. I mean, in areas, in Florida.
Well, it came down to all over again. Do you want law and order or lawlessness? I mean, that's all it came down to.
Yeah. The messaging that we gave resonated with the voters that came out and voted. It was a winning message. It was the right message. It's what people wanted to hear. And at the end of the day, we now are five seats away from the majority, which is going to make it very difficult for the Democrats to do any of that progressive stuff.
Well, maybe those five congressmen to switch over, maybe they need bridges in their towns.
Another
bridge.
Also, we have enough work to do right now, but just looking ahead 2 years in the off-year election, in the first term of a president, the minority party almost always, or the opposition party almost always, picks up a large number of seats. If you guys can just pick up 5, 6, or 7, you're going to be back in charge, and you'll be way up there. As it is, you're going to make a great impact, but in the majority, you can do a lot more, and that's what we have to work for. Well, you guys have to work. I can sit back and watch, but you guys really have to go out there, and I know you will, Andrew. You're going to do a phenomenal job. I can see it during the campaign, the way you were connecting with the voters. My neighbors are still talking about you, what a nice guy you were. And I wish you all the best in Washington. You're going to do a great job. And have a happy Thanksgiving. And say hello to your father for me and also your Irish mother. Make sure we get that in.
It was great. Italian and Irish. It was definitely one of the better things I got to campaign on. It was people loved it. But
you got 40% of the vote just there.
That's right. That's it. That's what did it. So anyway, Andrew, thank you very much. And again, happy Thanksgiving, and I know you're going to do an outstanding job in Congress. All the best to you and your family.
Thank you.
Thank you,
good
Congress.
Luck. Happy Thanksgiving. Well, what do you think? You know, we have a hard break coming up at 4:45, and then
I was going to say before, listening to Art Chomsky, and baseball is one thing, but the way New York can come together with spirit, and I think we saw it the other day, the way those athletes generated the attention. And I know, for instance, Jimmy Breslin, who's an old friend of mine, he had written a book about the 1962 Mets. Can't anybody here play this game? His son Kevin is now talking with Hollywood. They want to make a movie about that. If we could have the Mets come back, have the Yankees have a great team, have a movie out about the old
Remember
Mets.
Remember what we said at the press conference the other day? Let's have a Subway Series.
Right, exactly. So
have Yankees win, have the Mets win, and fight it out.
And if we could have a movie out at the same time about, about Mets in New York. But it's really about New York is what it is. And there is a certain spirit in New York. We saw it the other day. You really touched into that, John. And, again, we got to turn this city around politically. We have to let real people have a voice. We have to have people in the neighborhoods be able to speak.
You know, the other thing we haven't talked about yet in the state Senate, they got a supermajority. I mean, they claim they have the numbers, and how does that affect it? Maybe Governor Cuomo has enough strength not to let him bother him, but what happens with future governors?
Yeah, and it's and I hope Governor Cuomo, I mean, he's gone far enough to the left over the last few years. I hope he doesn't totally go to the left now with this new Senate. I mean, it's going to drive business out of New York. It's going to drive people out of New York. And to me, it can have a real devastating impact. If the Senate Democrats and the Assembly Democrats are given full speed ahead, it's going to be disastrous.
Well, I got a question for you. It doesn't look like de Blasio or Cuomo are going to be given a high-level seat in Washington if Biden is the new president.
I certainly don't think Bill de Blasio is, and Governor Cuomo, I know he has a good personal relationship with
he's got a probably – look, we both go back with the Cuomo family a long way.
I've always gotten along with Andrew Cuomo. I've had some political issues with him, policy issues the last few years. No, I mean, Governor Mario Cuomo, Andrew Cuomo, even Chris Cuomo. He and I have gone around a few times on CNN, but it's a good family.
What was the old expression Ed Koch used to have? If you agree with me on 70%.
Right. No, because Koch had a few expressions. I know what you were getting at there. Okay, yeah. No, right.
If you agree with me on 70%, then You must be, what it was, you must be sane?
Sane, if it's 90%, see a psychiatrist or something like that.
Something like that. We're going to be taking a break, and when we come back, we're going to have Stephen Moore to tell us how the heck is the economy, and is the market going to go to 35,000? Let's take a break. This is 77 WABC.
America in crisis. It's election 2020 with John Catsimatidis and special guests on 77 WABC.
This is 77 WABC. In the studio with Congressman Peter King. And we have another guest just came in. We got Kevin McCullough. How are you, Kevin?
Hey, John. Looking forward to next hour, your weekly get-together on Wednesdays.
Well, we're going to find out what the heck is going on in our city, our country. And you know, like I said before, I'm scratching my head. I got a bald spot.
I've been enjoying the discussion.
I've
been scratching a lot. I've been enjoying the conversation. I like it when Congressman talks about needing more Irish in talk radio. Anybody named McCullough, of course, has to have that perspective. But Congressman, keep fighting the good fight. And seriously, we miss you already. I mean, Mr. Garbarino is going to do a good job. But what you did for this country for the last all those years. And I remember the impeachment years. I mean, I was just a kid going, hey, who's this Congressman Peter King? But it was you've given us more than we could have asked for. And we really are going to miss you.
Well, thank you, Kevin. And listen, I loved every minute being down there. I just left because it was time to have a new chapter. And I'm in good health, and I wanted to enjoy a few good years. And my wife, Rosemary, is also in great health with our kids. But, no, listen, thank you. I appreciate that. And any good I did, I'd say I had great constituents, and they deserved it. So,
We have one of our country's leading economists. We have Stephen Moore on the line. And, Stephen, are you there?
I am here.
Well, what the heck is going on? Is the economy, is it Donald Trump's economy or is it Joe Biden's economy?
Well, right now there's no question that this economy is a rocket ship. I mean, in terms of where we were 6 months ago, John, versus where we are today, it's just unbelievable. It's one of the great and swiftest recoveries we've ever seen in this country. I mean, all the whiz kid economists on Wall Street. They said we would have 13-14% unemployment, by the end of the year, and now we're down to below 7%. This week, John, we've gotten more good data. In fact, the number of people on unemployment benefits fell by another 400,000 this past week, which is really strong. That means people are getting back into the workforce. The durable goods orders and capital purchases numbers that came out today or yesterday were very positive. Housing, John. Very strong, so it's a very strong economy. Now, the thing that could really derail this would be more and more of these lockdowns that we've talked about week after week on your show. And you can't have a functioning economy if you have the government and the politicians shutting down the businesses.
Well, you're absolutely right. The economy in New York City is I don't have the right word for it, Peter. Peter, you have the right word for it?
Anemic.
It's worse than that. I mean,
it's invisible.
We're sitting on Third Avenue, and I look down Third Avenue. It's empty. I'm looking at the Fox TV set. They're looking up Sixth Avenue. It's empty. Yeah. I mean, and this is prime time. Kevin, any opinion?
Well, one of the things that we're already missing, and John, you and I were talking about this earlier, I think there's something like 160,000 private apartments that are empty in the city. You multiply that times every hotel. You multiply that times all the rental properties that are not being able to be occupied right now. I mean, Stephen, I don't know what we do in the microcosm that is New York, but I know that the Trump economy is working just about everywhere else.
Kevin, I know what we do.
Tell us.
We elect John Catsimatidis, the next mayor of New York City. I'm serious. I mean, we need a businessman. We saw what Donald Trump did to the national economy. Kevin, can you imagine what John could do for the city of New York?
Well, can you imagine the coalition he'd pull together?
Well, yeah. I'll tell you one thing I would do. I don't care what Albany says. If people commit crimes, they're going to go to Rikers and they're going to lose the keys for a few days. What else can you do? I mean, accidentally, the police commissioner would be working for the mayor.
Right.
And you said, hey, accidentally lose the keys. I mean, go and prove we accidentally lost it.
Well, I think you can't begin to repopulate the city until you deal with the crime issue.
That's it. It's
got to be safety
COVID.
First.
It's not COVID. The reason that people are staying out of the city is crime.
That's it.
Now, Stephen, it's your show. Don't let us take it away from you.
So, look, I think when it comes to cities, and as you know, John and Kevin, I hail from Chicago, and things are really bad there, too. A lot of the big cities have been, because of the lockdowns and because of the crime and the rioting, have really been hurt. You know, we've got a really strong housing market right now, and I hate to tell you why. It's because people are leaving out of cities. They're moving out of the cities, and they're moving and buying houses in the suburbs to get away from the crime. So, John, when you are mayor, and I'm going to do everything I can to A, make you run, and B, to help you get elected, because we saw what happened with Rudy Giuliani. You know, when you put somebody who knows how to run things.
I saw what happened with Donald Trump.
Exactly. We saw with Trump, we saw with Rudy, right? So you're the third leg of this stool. But, you know, you got to do three things. You talked about two of them. You got to get crime off the street and the criminals off the street. You've got to do something about the taxes and being pro-business, because without businesses, you don't have a city. And number three, John, you got to do something about the schools. I mean, the schools in inner cities in New York and Chicago and Milwaukee and Cleveland, you know, are just so deplorable. And we are doing real abuse to our children. But the first thing we got to do is get the schools open, but then let these families go to send their kids to good schools, because you're spending so much money in New York. And you know what? Frankly, families and taxpayers are not getting their money's worth.
Steve, this is Pete King, and I can't agree with you more. We certainly need John as mayor. I mean, we saw what Giuliani could do. Listen, some of us old enough to remember in the late 80s, early 90s, when all the intelligentsia was saying that New York was dead. New York's best days are behind it. Then we had basically like a 25-year renaissance, and then then you have de Blasio and these riots and demonstrations, which are almost sanctioned by the government here in New York at all levels. That is, I think, devastated New York, and that is going to have more of a long-term impact than the pandemic. The economy is strong enough, I think, that the economy left to its own devices could come back and will come back stronger than ever. But so long as there's crime, people are afraid to come into the city. They really are, and businesses don't want to locate here. Crime is at the root of all this. Pandemic is going to go away, but the only way we can get crime to go away is get a tough mayor who lets the cops do what they have to do.
Well, Peter, you're 100% correct on that. And by the way, this is really quite a lineup you've got today. John Katzimini, Kevin McCullough, and you, sir. So it's great to be
I needed the job.
I know.
You had nothing else going on.
To be in your company. But, you know, my point is that when you have great leadership, because, look, New York City is a great city. I mean, the people of New York are so amazing, the way they stand together. Look at how they stood together after 9/11. And, you know, I was just reading, prior to coming out of the show, this great little essay by Heather McDonald from the Manhattan Institute. And she talks about the grit and courage and bravery of the pilgrims who came here. You know, did you know half of them died? Half of them died. When, you know, either en route or when they got here. So they took on an incredible mission to help create this great country of ours. And we need that kind of, well, that's what New York needs now. More of that grit and courage and bravery.
Well, New York, look, we go back. New York always comes back. You know, I'm older than some of you here. You remember there was a crash in 77. There was a crash in 87. There was, you know, what is it called? The 10-year itch?
Something like that.
Yeah, but you need the leadership. You need a tough guy, a strong person, strong man, strong woman, somebody come in who's willing to have the guts to do what has to be done and not worry about every small political consequence and pander to every group. It's to get the job done. John, you always say common sense. That's what we need. And your common sense should tell you that you should run.
Okay. Well, and you're a Democrat, aren't you, John?
We've all ganged up on him. I don't think he was expecting this.
I was a Bill Clinton Democrat. I never deny it. I
mean, you were a Democrat when I first met you.
I really admired Bill Clinton. I mean, I don't know how you felt about it. Did you work with Bill Clinton at all?
Yeah, in fact, I voted against his impeachment. He and I worked very closely on the peace process in Ireland. Listen, he was a traditional Democrat in that. Listen, I voted against many of his proposals. I voted against his tax cut. And having said that, he was common sense. He never went off the edge. And that was the main thing.
I had a long talk with Congressman Rangel this morning.
Oh.
And he is concerned. He's a patriot. Mm-hmm. He loves our country. Mm-hmm. And we had a long talk, and one of these days we're all going to be on the radio together, and he's going to give us his opinion.
Okay.
Yeah.
Now, Charlie is a patriot.
You know,
It would be hard to classify Bill Clinton as a current Democrat in the current Democratic Party. I don't
think
that
they... he's going along with everything, but I think deep down inside, I think he's...
But if he ran on the platform he ran then, now, would he be recognized in the party of AOC?
Probably not.
No. Yeah. In fact, the AOC people, they have contempt for the whole Clinton era. Now, they have contempt for George Washington.
Yeah, they have contempt for Abraham Lincoln.
They're trying to kick Feinstein out of the judiciary.
She is stepping down as chairman. Yeah.
And she was
She's not enough. She's not extreme enough for him. Yeah.
Well, Steve Moore, tell us, how far is the economy on temporary high?
Well, boy, it's tough to, it's hard to know right now because if we got this wild card of, this new president, probably coming in, I don't think it's completely over, but it's looking grim for the President Trump. And it depends on whether he follows through with this radical agenda of higher taxes, higher regulation, shutting down American oil and gas industry, trying to pack the court, getting rid of the filibuster, making Puerto Rico and Washington, D.C. the 51st and 52nd state. I mean, they have a pretty radical agenda. But I think the thing that has made a lot of Americans investors.
They haven't picked any radical people yet, have they?
They have not.
Is that because of the Georgia elections?
I think it's because I think Biden realizes he if he tries to govern from the left. Look, this election.
We're coming on a hard break
for the Republicans.
Stephen Moore, country's leading economist, thank you for calling in. We're coming on a hard break, and let's catch up over the weekend. This is 77 WABC. We'll be right back.